Dallas Theological Seminary's Chapel Podcast.
Well, good morning. Our speaker today spent the day with a team of leaders yesterday in our leaderboard outreach from the Center for Christian Leadership, where men and women come in from all over the country and spend a day or a half a day with us periodically throughout the year for some spiritual coaching and some challenging coaching. And our speaker yesterday, we kept him over so that you could have a time with him as well, is Dr. Steve Graves, who is the founder of Coaching by Cornerstone and the co-founder of the Life at Work Company. Dr. Graves has been coaching senior leaders, business owners, and entrepreneurs for over two decades. He is known for his wisdom, his wit, his ability to see through the complex to a simple path of progress. He's often referred to as a business and life Sherpa or coach to some of the most successful senior leaders in today's ministry and business landscape. Graves says that he has the best job in the world and really believes it. He's lived in Fayetteville, Arkansas for over 20 years. He's married, he has three children. And in the last 10 years, he has become very intentional about growing the next generation leaders. He speaks regularly, sits on several boards, and whenever he can, sneaks off to go fishing. Steve, thank you for spending the time with us this week at Dallas Seminary and with not only our Center for Christian Leadership, but also for being here in chapel. Would you join me in welcoming Dr. Steve Graves?
Well, thanks. Good morning. It's good to be here with you. And we get to see Mark at least once a year. He comes to our church in Northwest Arkansas, and we love his participation. So thanks for coming there, and thanks for letting me come here. It's a lot of fun. Lately, I have been rediscovering the Discovery Channel. Why, you might ask? Well, I have an eighth grade boy still living in home. According to my eighth grade son, he has the oldest father of any eighth grader on planet Earth. Don't know if that's true, but I don't have a lot of data to refute it. But if you have an eighth grader, if you know an eighth grader, if you're around any eighth graders at all, there's two things you probably watch on television: ESPN and the Discovery Channel. Discovery Channel is fabulous. I mean, it's got all these mega brands. It's got, you know, Deadliest Catch, Mythbusters, Everest, The Big Climb. I mean, it's got a bunch of them. Man vs. Wild, remember that one? Now, there's a great show. Man vs. Wild is built around this personality named Bear. I mean, how can you lose with a guy named Bear as your core person? Bear Grylls. He's a former British Special Forces dude that basically, he flies up to any of these places around the world, and he drops out of this airplane with nothing but the clothes on his back, a water bottle, a knife, a very impressive knife, I might add, a very nice knife, and a flint. And he drops into some place on the earth, and he always gets out. Takes him 3 days, like that. He's never been stumped before. Earth can't hold the man. Man versus Wild. Now, here's the deal. Man versus Wild, as fun as it is not the most profitable nor bell cow of the Discovery Channel. You know what it is? We have a winner. Dirty Jobs. You were looking at the slides. That doesn't count. Dirty Jobs. Dirty Jobs actually was the feature story of Fast Company two issues back. And it's built around a mega brand personality named Mike Rowe. And it actually is the most profitable show of the Discovery Channel. It is this guy who used to be a former QVC late night pitch man. And he's become this huge personality, and he's working his way toward 200 dirty jobs that he's going to chronicleize and then probably turn them into all sorts of things we have to go buy somewhere. He's on job 170 or 174, I think. It's a very, very fun show, especially if you have an eighth grade boy. There's a, according to Mike Ryle, there is a dirty side of almost every job. A very interesting quote came out of the interview in Fast Company. It might be even worth you looking at sometime. In the article, in the kind of the unwinding of this mega brand that he built, he had a couple of statements that have very precise, germane topic for us. Here's a couple of statements. Our show is an introduction to the men and women who do the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us. And whether he was kind of carrying pigs or struggling with a forklift or working through an oil sludge bank, whatever, he said this, and this was the quote that I grabbed that I want us to at least think about this morning. He said, "There's dignity in hard work, expertise in unexpected places, and deep satisfaction in tackling and finishing a tough job." Now, Dirty Jobs wasn't the original person who attached the topic of satisfaction along with our work. Actually, that was coined by another entrepreneur, part entrepreneur, hundreds of years before Jesus actually ever walked on the earth. The writer of Ecclesiastes in chapter 2, actually it's twice, but in chapter 2 is the one we're going to look at, he inserts the exact same word and attaches it to the topic of work. Don't know what word you would put? If you were asked to assign one word to the topic of work, could be bored, could be challenging, could be frustrated, could be treadmill, could be fulfilling, could be love it. All kinds of words could be attached. The writer of Ecclesiastes selected one word and threw it on top of the whole train, the whole concept of work. That's what we want to kind of look at today. We want to take that idea and build it out from a New Testament verse. Let's read the verse in Ecclesiastes first. Ecclesiastes 2:24 says, "A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find," what's our word? "Find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God." Now, I don't need to tell you, I didn't have to fly from Arkansas down here to tell you that we live in a culture, in a world that tells us and promises us satisfaction everywhere we turn. It tells me I can be satisfied because of the clothes I wear, because of the car I drive, because of the food I eat, because of the trips I take, because of the friends I make. I mean, just on and on. Every single kind of marketer is telling us or attaching the word satisfaction with kind of the usage or the fulfillment of the product. If you read the book Authenticity lately, the guys that wrote Experience Economy, in that they build the case that everyone promises satisfaction. Ecclesiastes says it's a gift slash the development of a mindset that happens. You know, in our world, actually, I think satisfaction might appear a lot of places. The last places appear sometimes is in our work. That's the thing that we want to kind of look at a little bit deeper. Did you realize that a Harris Report survey was done in the last couple of years that said this? It said that 20% of all people, and this was non-discriminatory of any jobs, 20% of all people, of all jobs, are only satisfied or fulfilled in their work. That means 80% of every single person that gets up, jumps in the car, and goes and does something called a job is not satisfied or not fulfilled. 21% of folks are always looking for a new job and nobody knows it. Their boss has no idea that they're cleaned up their resume and they're shipping it out via email. We live in a world that is, by and large, unsatisfied or unfulfilled in our work. I want us to take the New Testament, and I want us to go to Thessalonians. And I'd like for us to look at a couple of verses in 1 Thessalonians 4. Actually, these are two of my favorite verses in all of the Bible that address the topic of work. I'd like for us to take these verses and kind of break them down a little bit and do a little multitasking. Now, I know by now for sure multitasking is not new to this group. That's a competence that either you brought with you or you quickly found it and developed it when you got here. I want us to do some multitasking. I want us to build two lists at one time and then kind of push them together for a driving conclusion at the end. I want us to look at three or four quick observations of what a satisfied work life is constructed upon or built upon. And then I want us to try to identify a couple of myths along the way about work. And at the end of the two verses, we'll grab a conclusion and be through, okay? Here's the first one. Let's just read the verse first, and then we'll begin working our way through it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. "Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win respect of the outsiders and so that you will not be dependent upon anyone. The first phrase is this. The first phrase, right off the bat, make it your ambition to be quiet. Now, what in the world does that mean? Does that mean we all need to absolutely just throw away every bit of our iTunes? There's no such thing as iPods. Throw them away. We all need to go to a monastery. We need to all be issued muzzles. And when we find ourselves around people who kind of have the gift of gab, we say, excuse me, would you mind if I practice a little 1 Thessalonians 4? Would you put this on, you know? I mean, I was on an airplane Sunday, literally. True story, on the airplane, got a last-minute seat because I was flying standby because of some weather, and I think there was like, this must have been, you know, like a kid airline. I was in the back of the airplane, and there was probably 10 to 12 families with children everywhere. It was a loud outfit, okay? Loud. When the writer says, kind of, be in a quiet space, what's going through the mind of the writer, and what's the application for me connected to the topic of work? Well, fortunately, we have a couple of places we can quickly go look at other translations. Another translation says this, strive to have no turmoil or noise. Even a better one, be at calm within yourself. Kind of the first idea is this. I think a satisfied work life is a work life that has discovered a sense of inner peace, inner quiet, inner calm, inner settledness. Now, a lot of reasons can cause you or me to have noise on the inside relative to my work. Remember, that's the focus of these particular verse. It could be that I'm asking my job to do something for me that my job never, ever was intended to do. Whether I'm a pastor, it makes no difference. I could be asking my job to carry a bigger wheelbarrow than it was ever intended. No job was ever intended to kind of bring me all of success, all of significance, or all of security. None of that. And any time that a person begins to rely on a job to do that, they're going to find somewhere deep inside them the inner noise. There won't be quiet. There will not be settledness. It'll happen. It could be that I'm asking my job to actually do something that's in out of my fit or out of my calling. I really personally believe that a lack of fit or calling will create inner noise. It did for Nehemiah. Inside, deep down, it was just a little noise that wasn't working until he got in the right fit and in the right calling and adjusted the first calling or the first fit for a second fit, another one. It could be that I'm asking or that I'm giving my job actually too many of hours or too much of my passion or too much of my energy. Overworking can always cause inner noise. I don't need my wife to tell me, don't need my kids to tell me. Somewhere down there, if I'll just stop long enough and breathe slowly, I'll find some dissonance deep inside my soul that says, hey, Buster Boy, you're overworking. Inner noise. I personally believe that underworking, I believe that when I don't bring enough of my passion in my life into the thing God has assigned me to do, I personally believe, and I've experienced it and watched it for 20-something years with executives, I think that there's a little noise that happens there too. So kind of the first idea, at least I would like to present, or at least for us to pose today, would be this. I think a satisfied work life is constructed upon a sense of inner peace, inner quiet, inner settledness. Now, there's a myth that jumps right off of this one for me, at least it does. I think the myth would be people at the top are always satisfied. We think that. We might not have articulated it that way, but we believe that, we traffic that way, and we certainly think that deep, deep, deep inside. If I could just get to the top of the organizational chart, if I could get to the top of the financial pyramid, if I could move my way to the top of the title ladder or to the pay scale, there and for sure there, I would be a happy, satisfied, fulfilled person. Okay. I've been working with executives for a long time. I've had the privilege in 20-something years to work with some fabulous leaders around the world and around the country in all kinds of industries. I have some news for you from the street. You cannot imagine how many senior people at the top of their world, whatever their world is, go to work, park the car, walk in, shake hands with everybody, smile their way to their office, go into their office and shut the door, and they spin their chair around and they look out the backside to the window and they just sit there and they stare. You know why? Because they're not satisfied. Climbing to the top does not equal satisfaction or fulfillment. We know that theoretically, but we don't always practice it with the way we behave or we pursue our life goals. One myth, one observation. Let's go to the second phrase. Second phrase is the next part of the verse, and it says this. It says, busy yourself with minding your own things. Do your own business. The second big idea, at least I'd like to present, would be a satisfied work life is excited and focused on my own sandbox. Somehow I have to get to the place that I am able to rivet down my energy to the things that carry my own home address. It's amazing how much energy I have for things that have your home address. We have a tremendous amount of ability to kind of migrate our energy points over to things that don't involve us. I know my girls do. I can guarantee you that. They have incredible energy to know what the other one ought to be doing. And I'll just say, you just need to get in your own sandbox for a while. The verse here, I think, at least another translation that helps, is focus on your own affairs. The presentation is very simple. I need to somehow take my world and bring my energy down to the things that God has asked me to do. He's assigned me to be. He's called me to participate in. I need to be very comfortable with the gifts I've got. And like David saying, I can't wear the big outfit. I know that's what the traditional status giant killing uniform is, but that I just can't do that thing. And what we need to do is just become very comfortable and settled within our own sandbox and focused on that. Now, a shift has happened that has actually impacted this, I think, in the last 10 to 20 years. A recent survey by the National Bureau of Statistics says this. It says the average graduate in today's world will change careers 3 to 5 times. Again, it doesn't make a difference which career. This stuff has nothing to do with saying, oh, this career is different. No, it's not. The average graduate will change careers 3 to 5 times, and they'll change jobs within this 3 to 5 career fabric 10 to 12 times. And the average person will be working somewhere, actually 82% of the people will work in a career that has nothing to do with what they went to college about. Now, that's an interesting statistic. There's a good side to that, and I think there's a bad side. Here's the good side. The good side is there's tremendous freedom and flexibility for anyone who finds themselves at a dead-end road. If you're a person growing up in South Mississippi, like I was, without a father, like I had, and you were just an average person, I was not some stud. I was just a guy trying to get to the next grade. Oh, I surprised my mom every now and then with an A, you know. But if you're needing hope that you can jump out and do something different, that statistic should be hopeful for us. No longer are we just kind of, my dad was a plumber and my granddad was a plumber and I'm a plumber. Those days are not here anymore. That's the good side. Here's the downside. The downside is that we have a culture of what I call career ADHD. We have people who are kind of addicted to looking over the fence at what you're doing and saying, man, wish I didn't have to get up early. I mean, you know, God, that'd be great. If I could just kind of show up at 10, that's nothing. Now, what I don't see is that you work till 1. What I don't see is you worked all morning on Saturdays. See, then what we have is a culture that's always more interested in something else other than what I'm doing here. We live in a hyper-consumer world that loves to shop, and shopping doesn't stop at the malls with stuff. It goes to marriages, it goes to jobs, it goes to friends, all kind of things. The big idea would be this, at least the second kind of thing to hang our thinking around on a satisfied work life would be, I need to somehow focus down and rivet and nail down my energy to the things that carry my home address. You can't imagine how many people are addicted to looking over the fence at things they're not involved in. Very destructive behavior and very common for our culture, believers and non-believers, period. Here's the myth, I think, that at least would go along with that one. We've talked about it. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. I think that, listen, I can be content and satisfied. And we all know that just because I'm content and satisfied doesn't mean I'm always content and satisfied. I'm fine until you get a new car. I was absolutely doing great until you put the pool in the backyard. I was very content. You really messed my life up. The grass is not greener on the other side. We know that in theory, but we kind of move it to our practice. Third big idea would be this, at least coming out of the text. The last phrase I'd like for us to look at is the one that talks about working with your hands. You see that? Work with your hands. Now, this is an interesting phrase. I did a little research on this one. And the interesting part of this is the civilization that the writer was talking about there had an interesting dualism going. In that world, as you probably already know, mental labor was highlighted over manual labor. If a parent wanted to be proud of their children, they would not be proud of their kids because they did something involving their hands in the dirt, per se. You know, thinking and debating was the premium job of the day, coming all the way from Aristotle, who basically said, if I can convince you to take my position on anything, then I am the stud of the corner, and you can't beat me. And everything came down to persuasion, thinking and debating. Again, in my home, I've got some children that are very strong on half of that equation, and it's not the thinking, the debating. Very big, strong debaters in my family, okay? Paul walks in and he says, I need you to go work with your hands. Now, let's just, what is he saying? I need you to go get manual job because it's higher than any other job? I don't think so. I think what Paul was doing was in a very subtle way, they knew what the rules were. They knew what parents were proud of. They knew what the jobs were and were not that were the premium jobs in the market. And I think what Paul was saying is this. He was coming through and taking his hammer and just busting down the barrier between this kind of thinking about work value and this kind of thinking about work value. And he was saying basically it doesn't make a difference what kind of job you have. Both jobs have inherent goodness, assuming they're moral and assuming they're good and assuming they add value to the global enterprise called mankind. And by the way, both jobs can have God-connectedness and God-confirmedness of equal time. I think that's what he was saying. The myth? Well, here's the myth. The myth would be that ministry work is higher than all other work. Now, let me be clear. I know where I'm speaking today. Okay? However, I think a lot of times, especially evangelical ministers. A lot of time we as evangelical believers, we have the right thinking, and if I was given the test, I'm going to answer every question correct about the sacred secular split and the concept that ministry work and vocational ministry calling and all that, that it's not God's kind of first team and everybody else is on the second team, and we would answer every one of those correct. But when it comes time to pushing that out into practice, sometimes we're not quite as consistent with the way that we push that into life and behavior for those that listen to our messaging. In the early days, there was this manual labor versus mental labor. And Paul said, nah, 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 nah. God put his hands in the dirt and created mankind. So don't give me the God doesn't believe in manual labor thing. He was saying, don't put the wall up there. We get to the Middle Ages, and all of a sudden, there's the sacred secular split. This is all the stuff that's really big on God's list. These other things over here, do your best to stay away from those. You see? You follow me? I think a satisfied work life will never come as long as I have a mindset that God can only operate and be connected to a certain kind of work environment. And I think that's a lot of what he was trying to say there. Three observations, three myths. Let's go quickly to the conclusion so that we can get out of here on time. Here's the conclusion. Look at the last part of the verse. Now, I tell you, I can make all your professors proud of you here. You see the so that in there? The so that? The so that, as you well know, jumps over and wraps it all up for us and says, listen, all this stuff here was basically building for this. And he's basically saying that if I will do those, I will gain the respect of who? The outsiders. Now, unless I missed it somewhere, our whole agenda is for the outsiders, right? I think a satisfied work life is something that will be taken note to an outsider faster than almost anything in the world. When someone looks at another person, they say, now there is a soul satisfied in their work. They'll say, you have my respect. And then from the platform of respect, we're able to have the salt effect that we want, or the light effect that we want, or we're able to kind of spin a good aroma of the right perfume of Christ. We can't do that. If someone on the outside does not respect me, I can spin the perfume all I want. I can try to be salt and light. I can bomb them with Bible verses. But you know what? I will never, ever be able to have the transforming influence of Christ like I could if they respect me. And at least in this particular verse, respect is tied to some very specific things that are tied to my work. Let's put a wrap on it. Back in 1981, the Oscars were actually given to a documentary of sorts. And it was given to a movie that we all are very familiar with. It was Chariots of Fire. And the movie was built around these two high-profile personalities, these two kind of individuals, both of them top of their game, both of them world-class sprinters, both of them, you know, kind of big names on the horizon at that time. One man, Harold Abrams, actually was a world-class sprinter that had worked his way through the world of Cambridge, and through that environment and setting had kind of come on the national scene. Now, both men were invited to the 24 Olympics in Paris that year, and that's what kind of was the stage, okay? So we have Harold Abrams on this side. On this side, of course, we have Eric Little, and Eric Little had gone through, and because he was blazing speed as a rugby player, everybody kept doing this, man, you know, just give the ball to Eric, and it's over. Nobody can catch him. He was invited to go and run in the Olympics. You know, two different personalities, all right? Both men just simply happened to be going to work. Instead of being in suits, they were in sporting gear. Their pulpit was not up on stage. Their pulpit was on a big round stretch of dirt called a track. But that's where they did life out, okay? And at the end of kind of their tenure, I want to read you just one simple quote from each side of this kind of comparison. One man had a satisfied life, one did not. Here's the first one. Eric Little said, God made me to go to China and God made me to run fast. When I read that, I don't hear a bunch of inner noise. I don't hear some guy who's looking over the fence trying to do this, and if I could just go do that, and if I could just go be that, and man, that looks great. He somehow kind of riveted down in his own world, knew what he could do and what he couldn't do, you know. And he brought the sense of godness and spiritual vitality to running around the stinking track. It was as big as going to China. Listen to Harold Abrams. This rocked my world. I am 24 years old. I have never, ever known contentment or satisfaction. I am forever in pursuit, and I don't even know what I'm chasing. I have 10 seconds to justify my existence. I'd like to tell you this. I work in a world where business executives and senior leaders and owners of businesses, and there is nothing that sticks out like a person satisfied in their work. You might be today saying, well, you know, my whole goal in my work is to get through and graduate. That's fine. You will find yourself one day being the message shaper for men and women who spend 80 to 100,000 of their best hours doing something called their work. And it's critical that we shape for them the right understanding of what a satisfied work life can be. Let's pray. Our Father, we are extremely grateful for the clear picture you've given us in your scriptures. And we're equally grateful for the portrait you've given us in friends and models and mentors. Thanks so much for the truth particularly around the topic of work, because that's where we spend so much of our life. And help us to bend our life toward your truth at every single isolated particular point that we can that has application for us. Bless this school and continue to have your powerful hand upon it. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.